Welcome to a special AHA Innovators Connection podcast, recorded live at the 2023 AHA Rural Healthcare Leadership Conference. I'm Maggie McKay, and I'm joined by John Rigi, National Advisor for Cybersecurity and Risk at the AHA, Michael Hamilton, founder and CISO of Critical Insight, and Jake Milstein, Chief Marketing Officer for Critical Insight. Critical Insight is an AHA preferred cybersecurity provider. John, Michael, and Jake, thanks for joining us today. It's so good to have you here to discuss defense and preparation tactics for rural hospitals against cyber attacks. It's such an important issue these days. Let's jump right in. Michael, tell us a little bit about your experience.
So most of my experience has actually been in government, although I have done a lot of private sector work. I was the managing consultant for VeriSign Global Security. I became the chief of information security for the city of Seattle. I was a policy advisor to Washington State government and vice chair of a Homeland Security Government Coordinating Council. And then I started a company so that we could work for all of those people without actually working for government.
And Jake?
So my background is actually in journalism, and Mike recruited me to the company. And one of the reasons he did is to better communicate to folks the importance of cybersecurity. And so, you know, I end up speaking in front of rural hospitals, larger hospitals, different hospital associations, and to a lot of hospital boards. Because one of the things that sometimes goes wrong is the jargon of cybersecurity, the jargon of IT, and the ability to break that down so that everybody can understand what the risk is and solve for that risk.
And John, we have a former FBI agent with us.
Yes, thanks. Great to be here. And great to be with my good friends, Mike and Jake, on this very important subject. So I've been with the AHA for about 5 years now as the National Advisor for Cybersecurity and Risk. Prior to that, as you indicated, with the FBI for about 28 years, including assignments at DHS and CIA. So happy to be in a position where I can continue to work for a three-letter organization and continue to serve the public.
So, gentlemen, why are rural hospitals at risk of cyber attacks?
Well, I'll jump in there. It's very difficult for rural health to make the kind of investments required. And one of those investments are you need people to handle these things. And there is no access to practitioners, really, if you're rural. And I think John actually brought up the biggest point, which is there's kind of an attitude that they're not coming for us, which is wrong. They're coming for you.
Right.
And just today, I was talking to the CEO of a hospital, and she was telling me about their hospital cyber attack. And one of the first things she said is, we never thought it would happen to us. Why would the Russians come after us? We're a rural hospital. Well, the truth of the matter is, they're coming for everybody. They're not paying attention to whether you're in Idaho or Iowa. They're paying attention to, hey, can we get ransom out of these folks? Hey, can we cause collateral damage? Hey, can we get attention from this? And they know that, you know, when you look at organizations, different types of organizations, you know, ones that are focused on patients are the ones that are going to want to get back up and running faster. These people who care about their patients makes them vulnerable. And that's terrible. The criminals are terrible people, and we have to remember.
And John, what recommendations do you have for hospitals with limited resources that still want to maintain a strong defense against cyber attacks, but maybe they don't have the budget?
It's a great question. And then just following up with what Jake and Mike said is that often hospitals, rural hospitals, again, believe that the sophisticated Russian organizations, cyber gangs, will not be targeting, as though their geographic location and remoteness is a barrier. But ultimately, the moment they are connected to the internet, we are all equally exposed to cyber risk, but we don't have to be equally vulnerable. And I think that's a key point, is first of all, for rural hospitals to understand that they are just as equally vulnerable to cyber attack as any large city hospital. So I think some of the first things they need to do to prepare for cyber attack is really to understand their own cybersecurity posture and really understand the scope of their networks and data. So we talk about just mapping the network, mapping your data, doing an inventory of medical devices and applications, third-party risk program, figuring out who has access to your networks and data and who is storing your bulk protected health information, billing and coding vendors. I think once you get to understand the bounds, the scope of your network, then you can start to put in place very helpful cybersecurity controls, the basics. multi-factor authentication, patching, limiting remote access, email security and testing, network segmentation. There's several others, but those are the basics that will help you get your biggest return for risk reduction in the most cost-effective way.
And you know, and adding to that, there's sort of a methodology, and we like to talk about it as a prepare, detect, respond methodology. The bad guys will get in. A determined nation state will get in. And so you can do all of the things that you could possibly do to keep them out, and yes, should, and that's part of preparation and protection. But they'll still get in. And so once they get in, you have to be able to detect them 24/7. There's a study that says that the average number of days a bad guy is in a system before detection is 200 days. When ransomware gets into a system, ransomware doesn't get in and then lock everything up. You know, if ransomware, if the malware gets in and starts looking and gets in, let's say, through a marketing person's computer, and I can pick on marketing because I work in marketing. So they get in through a marketing person's computer and they lock up all of the PowerPoints. Or is anyone going to pay a $5 million ransom because they locked up the PowerPoint? I mean, even a nice PowerPoint? No, right? No, the ransomware moves around the system and it takes time. And so you have to be able to detect it quickly. And then lastly, you have to have a great response plan. You have to be able to respond decisively. And that means you have to have the right technology. You have to have the right plan. You have to have the right people. You have to know who to call. You have to know, you have to understand your cyber insurance and what's covered. So understanding, you know, the question of what recommendations do you have is, are you doing all of the right things to prepare for an attack, to detect an attack, and to respond decisively? You cannot just say, hey, we're going to do all these things to keep the bad guys out. It won't work.
And how would you define a good incident response plan in a tabletop exercise?
So I want to back up just a little bit, because that last question about limited resources. So first of all, there are resources that can be acquired from the Department of Homeland Security, and they will do risk assessments for you, and they will do penetration testing for you. There is the state and local cybersecurity grant program is about to become congealed. And if a hospital has an elected board and taxing authority, they're in scope for those grant funds. I'm a real fan of policy in order to create security. When I worked for the city of Seattle, I could prove 40% of the compromised assets in the city were due to the use of personal email. So if you could drive 40% of that problem off a cliff with a policy change that says no more personal email, personal use on a personal device, why wouldn't you do that? So there are inexpensive ways of doing that.
Good to know.
Good incident response and tabletop exercises, you need to practice. You can't be reaching for the fire extinguisher and reading the instructions on it when the house is in flames. And there's lots of analogies like that. Your tabletops need to really exercise something has gone so wrong that patient care may be impacted. So it's not somebody got malware, how do we clean it up? It's the network is no longer operable. You need to have the right people at the table, and that includes finance, legal, executive leadership, everybody, because you're going to be making decisions that cost money. Scope your tabletop exercises for the worst case possible scenario, and that's what you want to practice.
And if an attack does unfortunately occur, which of course I do, how would you suggest a hospital respond after the fact?
You know, if I could, just again, backing up a little bit on the tabletop exercise. Fortunately and unfortunately, I've had the opportunity to deal with lots of hospital victims recently, including very, very recently, and done lots of tabletop exercises across the country, with from small hospitals to large systems. And there are some common concepts that I think would assist hospitals in the preparation and response. First, as Mike and Jake said, you've got to prepare, attempt to prevent, but ultimately you have to prepare for the eventuality that you would be attacked. And the first thing I always recommend is that their plans, emergency preparedness plans, be integrated with the cyber incident response plan. Often we do a great job with our emergency preparedness teams preparing for tornadoes and hurricanes and floods and fires because of the physical impact of those events, which will lead to a disruption and delay of healthcare delivery and risk patient safety. Yet a cyber incident, a cyber attack like a ransomware attack, will have some of the very same effects in terms of loss of all technology and then being faced with the challenges of continuing care without the use of technology, the availability of technology. So we talked this concept of the four R's, readiness, response, resiliency, and recovery plans should be integrated in this tabletop. And then we carry it one step farther, what I call the five R concept, regional, readiness, response, resiliency, and recovery. Because ultimately, when one hospital is attacked, there will be a regional effect as ambulances and patients are diverted to other hospitals and health systems, which may already be under stress due to COVID and other illnesses. So generally, what I call the ransomware blast radius. You're hit, but there will be collateral effect and damage throughout the region.
Yeah, and just to quickly pivot off of that, ICS NIMS training is free. So National Incident Management System and the Incident Command System, all that training is free, provided by Department of Homeland Security. I believe that's through Texas A&M, actually. And learning Incident Command System is exactly what John talked about right there. The differences between actual emergency management and earthquake and a cyber event. There is a whole lot of similarities there. And so that training is free. I really advocate people taking that.
That's great.
And can you share any examples of a successful response and mitigation of a cyber attack? Because we got to end with some good news, right?
Yeah, I mean, we got to have good news here.
Yes.
So, you know, I'll tell you a couple of really good ones. There's a hospital that we work with. They're very rural. And in order to service their MRI machine, they have a contractor come in from the MRI machine manufacturer. So contractor comes in, unbeknownst to the contractor, on his laptop is a malware toolkit. Now, what a malware toolkit is malware that can get injected, and it starts beaconing out to the internet because, you know, it wants to tell the Russians,
I'm here, what do you want
to
do?
Yeah. Right. And so this contractor inadvertently, unbeknownst to him, injected a malware toolkit onto the control system for an MRI machine. And our security operations center saw it. What did we see? We saw the beaconing out, right? This, hey, I'm here. Called them immediately, shut it down. That computer is toast.
Wow.
But the rest of the system up. And you know what? That happened right in the middle of the pandemic. And it would have been a terrible thing. It is a rural location where people would have had to fly in for. That's one. Another one is, look, the bad guys are really good at tricking people. We all know the Nigerian scam emails, and you're not going to fall for that. Or, you know, hey, my CEO needs some Apple gift cards. But here's one that happened. So woman in accounting is going for a hike with her friend. How does everybody know? Well, she put it on her Facebook page. She writing on her Facebook page, I'm going on a hike with my friend. You know, she and her friend are writing back and forth publicly on Facebook. Bad guy sees it and creates an email that looks like it's from her friend and says, hey, I found some new hiking trails. And it has a link. I mean, a very good fish, right? Or I guess you call it bad fish, good, bad. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And sure enough, she clicks the link and it takes her to an O365 login page. They use O365, so she doesn't think anything of it. And it asks for her username and password, and she wants to see these hiking trails. And so, boom, she puts in her username and password. Well, it was not a real page. It was a page that was not encrypted. Microsoft O365 sent an alert. Security Operations Center saw it, called, you know, and the bad guy at that point had her username and password. But because the Security Operations Center was able to catch it so quickly, they were able to shut down her account and nothing would have happened. So what could have happened there, right? A couple of things. Number one is she's in accounting. They could have started sending emails. And once you have control of her account, they could have started sending vendors invoices. They could have sent the CEO emails. They could have, you know, done what's called privilege escalation, which was getting into other parts of the system from that account. Those are all of the things that could have happened. But guess what? Nothing bad happened.
Thankfully.
Yeah.
You know.
And these are all organizations that get saved from something bad happening because they took the right steps to prepare.
Right.
They knew what their vulnerabilities were. They took the right steps. They decided, you know what? These are the steps we're going to take because we know the bad guys will get in. And when the bad guys get in, they limit the impact of the attack. Mike, can you just for a second talk about the risk equation?
Sure. Yeah, this is I think something that we need to talk more about, because it's never ever going to be about, we have perfect security, we don't need to worry about bad guys. Just throw that thought out. This is about managing risk. And when you're talking about risk, there's two pieces of it. There's the likelihood of a bad thing happening. So what's a bad thing? You lose records, you have money stolen, you're extorted, or you're just knocked down, right? I mean, there's very few real monetary outcomes that leadership in health need to worry about. And those are them. So We want to minimize the likelihood that something like that will happen, and you do that through the application of preventive controls. A lot of things that John talked about, right? Manage your vulnerabilities, have multi-factor authentication, although that's being defeated fairly routinely now. And I got a great example of that if we have time. But then after you've done everything, you've exhausted all, you train your users, you have email filtering, all of that, then you go to the other term, which is the impact. The impact can be help desk clean some malware off a workstation. The impact can be the FBI called and all of our records are for sale online. And you get to pick which one of those impacts is applicable to you through the application of detection and response. Exactly what Jake said. You got to see the signal that something has gone wrong in your network and put out the grease fire on the stove before the house is engulfed in flames. You can turn a cyber event into a tree falling in the forest by watching your network and having a good response plan and putting that into action.
Yeah, just to add to that, I can't emphasize enough how important it is for intrusion detection. So some of the ransomware bad actors now have actually greatly accelerated their attack cycle from the point of intrusion to the point of what we call detonation or execution of the ransomware. Because they understand many organizations now have become very adept or use managed service providers to detect anomalies and intrusions. So the sooner you can detect that intrusion, you have a much greater chance of mitigating the risk, containing it, and preventing the exfiltration of protected health information, which now accompanies almost every ransomware attack. So it's what we call the double-layered extortion method. So they're not only trying to encrypt your data and charge you a ransom for that, they're going to steal data just in case you've got those great backups in place to restore that encrypted data without paying. They're holding protected health information. I have seen attacks execute within 4 hours from the point of intrusion to the point of encryption. So tremendously important to have those excellent intrusion detection systems and capabilities in place.
This has been so much good information. It's a lot to wrap your head around, but boy, is that important? Or I mean, what's more important than this when it comes to the patients themselves? So John and Michael and Jake, thank you so much for joining us today at the 2023 AHA Rural Healthcare Leadership Conference. For your listeners, if you'd like to learn more about Critical Insight and listen to other podcasts, please visit ruralconference.aha.org/innovatorsconnection. And if you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels. This has been an Innovators Connection podcast brought to you by the American Hospital Association. Thanks for listening.